My name is Bree. This happened in 2016. I was 19 years old at the time. I was up late the night before into the early morning studying, and I hadn't had much sleep, so I had just woken up from a nap. I decided to hop in the shower to wake myself. That's when I heard this weird scraping sound coming from somewhere outside. I stopped the shower and peered out from behind the curtain, and then made my way over to the window. I saw nothing, but I could still hear the noise. I thought it may have been my neighbor working in a shed, so I ignored the disturbance and finished up in the shower. Before I continue, I should inform you that I have severe anxiety problems, and I often get a little paranoid sometimes. It also doesn't help that I have PTSD as well. Anyways, I was now back in my room, and I took a seat on my bed. I texted my then-boyfriend and asked him what he wanted for dinner. While I was waiting for him to respond, I just relaxed and scrolled through my Facebook. I was reading an article about the recent clown sightings that were happening at the time, when I was interrupted by the sound of footsteps coming from outside. I stopped and listened carefully. I heard a few more steps, followed by a tapping noise. I was a bit confused by this. It hadn't yet occurred to me that I had an unwelcome guest outside. I was thinking why my boyfriend hadn't knocked on the door or called before he showed up. We usually had a routine with things like this, especially if I was home alone. He would either text, call, or FaceTime me to let me know when he was on his way home, or if he was at the door, because there had been a lot of shady activity around our neighborhood at the time. I then called out to him, and suddenly, all fell silent. I texted him and asked if he was at the door. There was no reply, so I decided to peek through the bedroom window. While I was making my way to the other side of the room, my phone started ringing. It was my boyfriend wanting to FaceTime. When I answered, he said he was about 15 minutes away. As I was talking to him, I pulled back the curtains of my bedroom window, and that's when all the blood in my veins turned to ice as I came face to face with a fucking clown. I know I wasn't hallucinating. An actual clown was looking at me through the window, smiling. After my initial shock, I actually started to laugh, thinking that this had to be some kind of prank my boyfriend was pulling on me. So I played along, pretending to be terrified, and whispered into the phone. "Very funny, asshole. Love the whole scary clown thing." I chuckled and rolled my eyes. My boyfriend was confused, and I explained to him about the clown at the window, and said that he and his friend did a good job scaring the piss out of me. He seemed confused, saying that all of his friends were hanging out at the pub, and that he was not a part of any plan to prank me. Upon hearing this, I felt my stomach in my throat as I looked back at the clown, who was still just outside my window. He reached into his costume and pulled out a very real-looking butcher's knife. By this point, I wasn't sure what was going on, so I grabbed my baseball bat. My boyfriend told me that he was now only a few minutes away. He shouted at me to stay inside and to lock all the doors and windows. I quickly closed the curtains and went into the lounge. It wasn't long before I heard a loud pounding on the front door. Suddenly, I heard a creepy voice coming from the other side.
"Let me in, child."
I didn't respond to the voice. I just stood perfectly still, waiting for the next move. Loud pounding rang out again, causing the door to rattle on its hinges, but I kept quiet, even when I heard the doorknob rattling. Although I was pretty scared at this point, I was also getting a tad irritated and yelled out to the clown,
"Fuck off! Go annoy someone else!"
I then heard muffled laughter, followed by the creepy voice.
"Please let me in, doll. I just want to play.
I want to play with your insides."
I had enough of this. I was about to go out and confront this creepy asshole myself when I heard my boyfriend's voice, who was still on the phone, say,
Hang up and call the cops.
After some consideration, I thought that maybe confronting the creepy clown outside with a butcher's knife was not the correct course of action. So I did as my boyfriend said. I left the lounge and was soon explaining to the police dispatcher the situation. I was on my way back to my room when I heard the sound of glass breaking. I stopped in my tracks and told them that I think the clown just broke into the house. They immediately told me to get somewhere safe, and that's when I heard my ex yelling out,
"Hey, what the fuck are you doing? Get the hell out of here! The police are on the way!"
The clown just bellowed out a psychotic laugh and took off. As I made my way back into the bedroom, something caught my eye. I peered out the window. Through a gap in the curtains, I saw another clown. He appeared to be holding some kind of saw blade in his hand. I went to move, but I was like a deer caught in the headlights. I couldn't move or scream. Fear then overcame me, as I realized my boyfriend was now out there with two creepy clowns. I screamed into the phone,
"There's another clown outside my bedroom. Please hurry."
After a few moments, I was relieved when I heard my boyfriend at the back door. I quickly let him inside. We then held each other tightly until the police arrived. After taking our statements, the police discovered a rusted hacksaw and an axe lying on the ground outside of my bedroom window. There were red marks all over them. Of course, the creepy clowns that had turned my night into a freak show were nowhere to be found. After that night, I struggled to fall asleep. I often think to myself, what would have happened to me if I had been stupid enough to open that door? Were they just a couple of thrill seekers looking to frighten a girl who was all alone? Or were they, in fact, out for blood?
My grandparents had passed away within a few months of each other, leaving their house empty. There was talk of renting it out initially, but because of its poor state of disrepair, the family decided against it. No consensus about what to do with it could be arrived at, therefore it would be left to decay for another decade or more before I would stumble upon it. My aunt and I were going through my mother's things and discovered an old family photo album. Mom had gone off on one of her journeys and no one was sure if she'd ever return. Her and I had been having an on and off relationship for years, so there was a lot about the family I didn't know. I came across a picture of her and I when I was just a baby, but I didn't recognize the house we were standing in front of. I inquired and my aunt told me about the old Wheeler family house that had once belonged to her parents. No one had been there in over a decade and she wasn't even sure if it was still standing. So, after half an hour of badgering, she agreed to take me out to see it. That following morning, we headed out of town through 30 miles of cornfields until we came to a turnoff that led down a long, weedy gravel road. As we crested the hill, I was taken aback. The house I saw before me, despite being run down, was still breathtaking. In its prime, it must have been the finest home in the county. My aunt pulled up within a few yards of it and we got out. From what I could see, nobody but the occasional mowing company had been there in a very long time. I couldn't help but be in awe of the place. The vibrant pink and blue paint had long faded from its soaring towers, and the massive porch was beginning to sag in a few places. Before I entered, I wanted to take in every bit of the wonderful facade as I could. Around the back was the remnants of the old horseshoe pit and, what I was told, my grandfather's Ford pickup. Although the big house had long seen its best days, I knew I hadn't seen anything that could have compared. Maybe one of those beautiful Victorian mansions in San Francisco. Even those would be dwarfed in comparison to this. When I was ready, we climbed the concrete steps and entered through the back entrance. From the moment we cracked the door, we were overwhelmed by a hideous smell coming from inside. We assumed it was a normal part of having a house sealed for so long and continued with our search. Everything appeared as if it had been left where it was on my grandmother's last day, almost like a time capsule or museum. The lights were even still working. Only later did I discover that my mother had been paying the bills all these years in hopes someone would return and live there someday. Walking from room to room and seeing all the beautiful antique furnishings, I couldn't stop wondering why I had never been told about the house. Regardless of our frequent estrangements, I would have helped my mother with the upkeep of it. It was downright insane to me to leave such a beautiful place to rot. Then again, my mother's strange ways were the main reason for our frequent falling outs. As we made our way to the second floor, the smell only got worse. I suggested we cut our visit short and just take a quick look around. Every door was closed, so I went for the closest one and stuck my head in. This must have been a guest room or spare. Upon the bed laid a beautiful and elaborate quilt easily over 100 years old. My aunt was going through a cedar chest in a room next to me. I joined her and we discovered another much older photo album and decided to bring back with us to look at later. She closed the door behind us and I made my way toward the last room. Unfortunately, the closer I got to the door, the stronger the smell got. I was reluctant to open it, but I thought if the poor critter was where I could get to it, I'd take it outside and give it a good burial. Cracking the door, the stench slapped me in the face, and I lost focus for a moment. When I regained my composure, I was met with a terrible sight. Before me was not a dead forest creature, but a human being. The bloated body, now unrecognizable, laid curled up silently on the bed. I could feel my knees begin to buckle, so I turned as quickly as possible away and out of the room. My aunt was confused by my behavior and stuck her head in before yanking it out, quickly again. We both ran down the stairs where the smell was less potent and I called 911. The officers spent a few minutes in the room before coming back out with a small piece of paper and a driver's license. One of them joined us at the table where we were sitting and asked a few questions about my mother. This made me nervous and I began demanding he explain himself. A serious look came across his face and he told us that the body appeared to belong to my mom. I didn't want to believe it at first, but when he handed me her license, I knew it was true. My aunt and I held each other for a long time and cried. The officer gave us a few moments before interjecting himself again. Then he asked me if I knew why she would take her own life. I had naturally assumed my mom had died in her sleep. She was an older woman, but the note he handed me made everything clear. She had been depressed for a long time because of being at odds with each other, and the last time we spoke, some things were said, and she feared she couldn't take it back. The morning after our argument, she decided to return to the only place that she'd ever been happy. Although she claimed to not be sure of what she was going to do at the time, the poor state of the house just sent her over the edge. The last sentence asked that I not blame myself for her death and that I move on with my life. The ending read simply, "Goodbye, Mom." A couple of weeks later, after everyone had time to deal with their grief, I brought the remaining family members together. After seeing the old house and realizing how the poor condition of it hurt my mother, I proposed we try to raise the money to renovate it. In light of what had just occurred, I wanted to at least try to create something positive from our tragedy. I was given their blessings and went to work. It took some time, but on the first day of spring 2018, the Historical Society allowed me to lead the first tour of the newly restored Wheeler Mansion. A great day could have been much better had my mother been there with me. No matter our differences, it was her who inspired me and the one who truly made it all possible.
I was born, raised, and still live in Texas. I come from a family of hunters. It's pretty much a family tradition. I'm going to tell you about something that I experienced when I was 20 years old, back in 2005. My father had just been diagnosed with lung cancer, and everyone in my family was naturally devastated by this, especially me, since my dad and I were very close. I had a lot of other personal stuff going on in my life at the time, and I felt that I needed to go out for a few days just to clear my head. I decided to make it a solo hunting trip, and packed up some camping gear, along with my Marlin 336 that my dad gifted to me when I was 18. If I could get sentimental for a moment, my father ended up passing away 3 years after his diagnosis, and to this day, I still use that rifle for hunting. Anyways, I'd say this happened around late October, early November. I don't want to be too specific with a location, because technically, I wasn't supposed to be hunting in this specific area. However, I will disclose that it was near the Mexican border. This will be important later. I decided to set up camp for 3 days before heading back. I had been hunting on this land before with some friends of mine, and I knew the precautions to take not to be spotted by the game warden. I'm sure if there's any other hunters listening to this broadcast, they'll be more than happy to tell you that we often wipe our asses with the rulebook. Before anyone judges me too harshly, or the practice of hunting in general, I will say that I'm a very spiritual person, and I have a profound respect for Mother Nature. I don't leave trash everywhere, and every animal that I put down, I never let go to waste. I'll be the first to admit, there are hunters that give us a bad name. And me not following the rules is more of a middle finger to the government than it is to the sport of hunting. I once straight up beat the shit out of someone who was a friend of a friend for shooting a stray dog for absolutely no reason. If it's consolation to anyone, I handed him a horrible ass whooping for that. But I digress. The first day went off without a hitch. No problems whatsoever, aside from the fact that there was no game to be found anywhere. So I figured that I would head further south the next day to see if my luck would improve. Other hunters knew about this restricted location and may have already cleaned out this area. As night fell, I found myself sprawled out next to my truck, just staring up at the night sky, wondering if me and my dad would ever take another hunting trip together. That's when I heard the sound of footsteps slowly making their way through a nearby brush. This was alarming for obvious reasons. Whoever they were, they had the drop on me. I knew better than to light up a campfire under these circumstances. But if this person was roaming around in the dark without a flashlight, they may have had some kind of night vision apparatus, giving them the advantage. I was concerned, because if you were looking at me through the trees at that particular moment, it would have appeared that I was sleeping. I was in this odd position where I was resting on top of my sleeping bag with a blanket, because I felt claustrophobic being fully immersed in a sleeping bag. It was a good thing too, because this meant I was able to mobilize quickly, and something told me that I only had seconds to make a decision. I rolled sideways, and as soon as I did, I caught a quick glimpse of a muzzle flash coming from the tree line directly in front of me. I felt dirt fly up and hit my back from the bullet striking the ground next to me. I scrambled to my feet as more shots rang out from the trees, one of them shattering the passenger side window of my truck. I took cover behind the bed of my pickup and quickly drew the .38 snub-nose that I had strapped to my ankle. After the gunfire died down, I laid flat on the ground and returned fire in the direction of the trees from under the truck. I heard several sets of footsteps fleeing from the area, but I held my position in case my theory about the night vision was correct. With only two rounds left in my .38, I pretty much spent the rest of that night underneath my truck with my pistol aimed at the darkness until the sun came out and illuminated my surroundings. I very cautiously got out from beneath my vehicle and packed up my gear as quickly as I could and hightailed it out of there. Later on, when I told a friend of mine about the incident, he said he wished I would have told him that I was heading that way. He would have warned me that the Mexican cartel started using that area to smuggle contraband and people across the nearby border. This friend of mine was a Mexican immigrant himself and had several family members mixed up in the cartel and coyote groups. So needless to say, I trusted his word. All things considered, I think I got off pretty easy. Had I been in my sleeping bag that night, I have no doubt that bullet would have nailed me. These days, I stick to the designated hunting grounds. Some things are just not worth the risk.
I live in a major city in Texas. My apartment complex is gated and in a good neighborhood, but the security isn't extremely tight. Sometimes the gates are left open and anyone could piggyback off of someone else entering with the access code. Maybe twice in the past 3 years, the management has put out notices of vehicle break-ins and other items being stolen from porches. We also have frequent door-to-door solicitors, even though there are signs forbidding it. So this particular Friday evening, I go to bed at about 2:30 a.m. For some odd reason, I was having trouble getting to sleep, so I put on a podcast to listen to and eventually start to doze off. I become aware of a noise that sounds like a clicking sound, but it sounds like one of my upstairs neighbors making some noise. I kinda zone this out, as I'm used to my neighbors staying up late on weekends. After about 30 seconds, I realize the noise is extremely repetitive and getting louder. I then start focusing on it more intently, trying to isolate what it could be and where it was coming from. Suddenly it hits me. It's coming from the entrance to my apartment. I leap out of bed and head to the foyer. I identify the noise right away. The lock mechanism is moving back and forth rapidly, like someone is trying to unlock the front door. I can hear that an object is inserted into the lock and the person is jimmying it back and forth with a lot of force. I instinctively turn around, head to my bedside safe, unlock it with the combination, and pull out my .357 SIG pistol, load a 14-round magazine, and chamber a hollow-point round. I head back to the door, and as I exit the bedroom, I see the lock twist and unlatch. I immediately pointed my weapon straight ahead, knowing that if someone comes through, I will have to make a split-second reaction. I decide that if someone comes through my door, I will give them a momentary chance to retreat, but if they do anything other than that, or enter aggressively, I'm going to shoot and ask questions later. They don't enter. However, because I had also locked the deadbolt inside only, when I first moved in a year prior, I remember thinking that the deadbolt was a great security feature, and I got in the habit of always keeping it locked when I'm home. In hindsight, this decision saved me from a life-or-death confrontation. Upon realizing that, I approached the door and looked through the keyhole. On the other side are three Asians, two men and one woman. All three are wearing hoodies, so it's difficult to make out their faces. The men have objects in their hands, but I can't make out exactly what. The two men are talking back and forth, probably trying to figure out why they can't open the door, even though they have successfully opened the outside lock at this point. The woman is also talking loudly behind the two men, such that anyone in the hallway would be able to hear her voice. She's talking in another language. The only words I can make out are, blah blah blah, apartment 250, blah blah blah, and she keeps repeating that over and over like a broken record. Upon hearing that, I start to wonder for a moment if maybe they're just drunk and have the wrong apartment number. But that's impossible. To open my lock, they would have to have a copy of my exact key or some kind of lock-picking device. I've never copied my key or even given it to anyone. And here's the other thing. Not only is 250 not my apartment number, but, as I figured out later, that apartment number doesn't exist anywhere in the complex. Standing back from the door, I take a long broom handle and jab it hard in the face of the door, letting them know that I'm on the other side. They immediately stop fiddling with the lock and take off running. I debate whether to call 911 and decide against it until they return. I know they'll be long gone by the time anyone gets there. It would be too risky to follow them to try and get a better description or license plate, and I don't have enough identifying info as it is to make an arrest. I filed a police report the next day and let the apartment management know. They said it was unusual, but they would alert the resource officer and ask for a police presence for a couple of nights. Nothing ever came of the report, but it's not a surprise to me. It's been 7 months since this happened and no further incidents. Nobody else in the apartment has reported anything similar happening. I don't think they'll be back, but one precaution I took was to buy a smart lock for the deadbolt, so I can leave that deadbolt always locked from the inside, even when I'm not home. It's crazy to think that the deadbolt was the only thing between myself and an armed confrontation with intruders. They say you don't really know what you'll do in those situations until it really happens, but I can honestly say I am proud of how I stayed calm and was mentally prepared to defend myself. If there's one good thing that came out of this, I feel confident that I responded the right way and was ready for the unthinkable.